The Tom Woods Show, episode 1861.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, creating an online course can be an excellent way of establishing yourself as an authority. It's also a great first product. And if you know what you're doing, it can generate you some real smackers. But how do you do it? Well, I have a teensy-weensy bit of experience with online courses, and I've put together some material that takes you through step-by-step exactly what to do and then how to market that course so people find out about it and buy it. Get these free resources at tomwoods.com/makecourses. Hi, everybody. Tom Woods here. Mark Morano is back on the show, and this time he's talking about his brand new book, Green Fraud: Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. You can check out Mark's work over at climatedepot.com, and I will link to that along with his book on our show notes page, tomwoods.com/1861. You can also get a free audiobook of the book if you sign up for Audible, and they'll send you a free audiobook. And then if you don't want to continue with Audible, you just cancel and you can keep your free book, and Mark gets his royalty and everybody's still happy. So you can do that at tomwoodsaudio.com. So however you like to consume content, we got you set up. Mark, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Tom. Happy to be on.
All right. So we have a book. You've done a book on climate change, A Politically Incorrect Guide, as a matter of fact. And now you've got a book specifically on the Green New Deal that I just introduced to the folks, which, of course, needed to be done. People are talking about this thing like it's just a policy proposal that you might oppose or support, but I keep thinking of it as like the end of civilization. So I'm glad that you're out there doing it. Can you just lay, I don't want to go into the stuff about Franklin Roosevelt, because just given our limited time, I did an episode on the New Deal a couple of weeks ago. I want to focus specifically on the Green New Deal. If you had to give a 1-minute presentation on it, what would be the key provisions in it that you would highlight?
Well, the Green New Deal is a green fraud, very simply, because they have a fake climate crisis / climate emergency that they claim can only be solved with this Green New Deal, which they're billing as not a change the climate or the environment, but a change the economy sort of thing. And essentially what they want to do is restructure every aspect of American life in order to prevent some alleged climate emergency off in the future. And they're doing everything in their playbook to make that happen. They're going after how we drive, how we live, our thermostats, our energy usage, our diets, trying to ban meat eating. They're promoting insect eating. They're promoting processed vegetable burgers and fake meat products. They're going to go after transportation. They're already saying under a climate emergency, you can't fly unless it's morally justifiable, unquote. So what this is going to do is make you poorer, subvert more of your life over to faceless government bureaucrats with new rules, regulations, skyrocket the cost of energy, do absolutely nothing for the climate. And it's going to be a continuation of COVID lockdowns morphing into climate lockdowns under a Green New Deal.
All right. That's a pretty good summary. You know, we'll talk about COVID a little bit later, but the parallel that seemed clear to me was that the COVID lockdowns have, you know, obviously spiraled into these crazy, unending totalitarian regimes everywhere. And yet the research shows that lockdowns at best have an extremely marginal effect, but that doesn't take into account all the damage they do in other areas. And likewise, it looks like the Green New Deal, again, would involve taking hold of the entire economy. Plus, they want to retrofit all buildings, but it's just impossible. And yet, as you say, the result, after all this, would be negligible anyway, even on their own terms.
Yeah, that's what's so shocking. Like I like to say, if we actually faced a climate emergency and you had to rely on the Green New Deal to save us, we would be doomed. The fact is, you would want to do the exact opposite. If we actually faced a climate crisis, which we don't, but if we did, you'd want to do the exact opposite of the Green New Deal. You would want free markets, technology, innovation, ingenuity. And that's essentially what you had. We had a little glimpse of what that would look like on a sustained level during Trump's 4 years in terms of energy policy anyway, because the massive deregulation, the promotion, the idea of American energy independence actually grew to American energy dominance to the point where, for the first time since 1952, the United States had more energy exports than imports. We became the world's largest exporter of oil and gas, the largest producer of oil and gas. The Trump administration actually achieved it all while doing a couple things that would shock the average person. CO2 levels dropped the fastest rate anywhere in the world, including the signatories of the UN Paris Agreement countries, that's particularly in Europe. And our pollution, traditional pollution, not carbon dioxide, but actual sort of smokestack pollution, continued to decline during the Trump administration. And this was all due chiefly from switching from coal to natural gas. So again, not only with the Green New Deal, it's the wrong solution if we actually face the problem, but it's actually the exact opposite of what you'd want to do if you actually cared about the environment and climate.
Well, let's go ahead and unpack one of the claims you've made a couple times already, that we're not really facing any kind of climate crisis. Because I've heard some people who don't like the Green New Deal, but who say we nevertheless do want to cut back on or even get rid of fossil fuels, so we can do it through nuclear or hydroelectric or whatever. But you don't take that view?
No, and that's the sad thing. The people I think you might be referring to are Republicans in office in Washington. Even members of the Western Caucus, some of the most free market conservative, many of them aren't that interested in fighting the scientific narrative or the case against the climate change crisis or climate emergency. So what ends up happening is they just want to argue over the cost. Like you just said, oh yeah, we'll do it this way, or we'll technology will fix it, or we don't have to worry about, we don't want to be seen as against the environment. The bottom line is, unless you challenge this narrative, we're doomed to a losing battle, because all Republicans are going to do is say, oh, well, the Green New Deal is too much. Here's a Green New Deal light version, which Mitt Romney has been floating, and people like Lindsey Graham are going to sign on to and like the idea. This is what the message from the Republican Party is going to end up being: a Green New Deal light, which is not, this is that same old, not so fast, me too Republican. What I argue in the book is you have to go to the heart of it. So I open the book actually with a debate I had, or this congressional testimony, against the former United Nations climate chief, Robert Watson. And I go through and I explain the entire crisis narrative of climate change was literally created by a political body of the United Nations, their climate panel, the IPCC, Intergovernmental Panel on Climate. And it was masquerading as a science panel. And I go through and I explain how they crafted a narrative, much the way a PR team would, or a campaign would be with a PR team. Anything that didn't go along with the narrative was crushed. Anyone who didn't go was deplatformed, defunded, not allowed to publish in journals, which was, you know, what we saw in the ClimateGate emails. And so they crafted this unchallengeable narrative where anyone who dissented was essentially silenced by modern means. And it was a very effective silencing, to the point where only emeritus professors speak out. So that's what I go through, and I explain carbon dioxide is actually at one of the lowest levels in the geologic history of the Earth. We're actually at one of the coldest periods during the geologic history of the Earth, 10% coldest. In other words, 90% of Earth's history was too warm to have ice at either pole. I go through and I quote former UN scientists, Nobel Prize winning scientists, climate scientists from MIT. We go through everything from the global temperature, which, you know, we've probably cooled since the medieval warm period and cooled since the Roman warming period of about 0 AD. Every weather event from hurricanes, floods, droughts, tornadoes are either a no trend or declining trends on climate timescales. I mean, the case for any noticeable human influence in the climate is not even there. You can't, in other words, humans may have an impact, but you can't distinguish it from natural variability. And I go through any point you want to mention, you cannot distinguish it. And that's what's so fascinating about this. That's the true scientific consensus, but the political consensus can't allow that.
I wonder if what we're experiencing with COVID will be a nice educational moment, let's say, for some people who probably haven't thought that much about climate change. But what they do know is that they've been fed an obviously untrue line about COVID. They've been fed a lot of wildly inaccurate models. I mean, remember, one of them said that by June of 2020, if Sweden didn't lock down, they'd have 96,000 deaths.
Yes.
Well, Sweden didn't lock down, and by June, they had 4,000 deaths. So yeah, our model was off only by a factor of 24. I wonder if this leads some people to think that, you know, maybe a lot of these models are full of it. And then maybe the supposedly saintly scientific establishment well, in addition to science, has some kind of political agenda to it. I mean, I personally think that much of the scientific community has absolutely disgraced itself during the COVID thing. And I wonder if there's a parallel here with climate change.
Well, I actually have, you know, almost two chapters just on that parallel. Absolutely.
Yeah.
In fact, the Neil Ferguson COVID dire predictions is basically a microcosm of the entire climate debate. You basically get an unalarming current reality. You make a series of scary predictions. You force some kind of draconian policy action. And actually, in the case of climate solutions, we actually have UK environmental ministers claiming the climate is now better because of all the green energy, solar and wind we've done. In other words, the weather would be worse had we not done these policies. And so in the case of COVID, it didn't turn out as bad as the models. They'll now be crediting, well, it's a good thing we did a lockdown. Of course, you're right. Sweden breaks that narrative. But this is exactly how they do it. When current reality fails to alarm, make a terrifying prediction, use it to lobby for political goals and policies, and then use it to silence any opposition. And we saw that exact thing in the COVID debate as we see in the climate debate. Anyone who spoke up, deplatformed. One of the Nobel Prize winning scientists was uninvited from scientific conference, not because he had different viral views, but because he was opposed to the lockdown solution. And then I parallel that with a polar bear scientist who talked about how polar bears are not in any threat from climate change. He was uninvited from a scientific conference. Same thing with the airline transportation. You know, you're not allowed to fly unless it's essential. You can't leave your house under the COVID curfew. Well, now you can't fly unless it's morally acceptable, you know, during a climate emergency. Same thing in climate. They wanted planned recessions to fight global warming. I detail this whole movement in the book, the degrowth movement. Then you move over and then you see the COVID. What is a COVID lockdown? But a planned recession by government to crush economic growth. And of course, who's the loudest cheering for COVID lockdowns? The climate activists. The whole chapter I have goes through Al Gore, John Kerry, Greta Thunberg, UN officials, all praising with a hint of jealousy. If we can do this for a virus, why can't we do this for the climate? They're just drooling at the prospect of going from the COVID lockdown to the climate lockdown.
Yeah. So as I say, I think this will make people, even me, and I'm cynical and I didn't buy into the climate hysteria either, but the parallel is so eerie between that and what we've seen with our own eyes right now. And man, they do not want to give it. It's the same sort of cultish behavior, by the way. Neither side likes to hear any good news. If you're the bringer of good news, they shout you down and denounce you, right? Because you're going to make people not be concerned about climate. I mean, have you ever had that experience? Because I, certainly with COVID, if I say, oh, look at hospitalizations plummeting in this particular area, it's like I've told them that I murdered their daughter. You know, I don't understand it.
Absolutely. If there's a study or, you know, anything that goes against their narrative, you can actually, even in the climate emails, the scientists huddle together. What are we going to do? This will make people think it's not less serious. I have documentation of UN scientists actually saying, wait till the next report. This is years in advance. It'll be so alarming. The world will have to act. Now, imagine that's like saying, wait till the next, you know, Pentagon report. It'll be so alarming. We'll have to go to war. And by the way, that's probably happened in every war we've had. Yeah. But it's the same thing. It's not science, though. It's politics, and it's a narrative building that goes forward on this. But one of the things in terms of the parallels, and I detail this in the book, the climate activists are so jealous that Australian climate academics, Australian National University, came up with the idea of adding climate change to death certificates. And Tom, don't think this isn't going to happen.
Oh, my gosh.
The idea is climate change will be listed on your death certificate. And what does that mean? Daily death tolls, annual death tolls, a climate emergency, as a way to lobby for more draconian government regulation in every aspect of our lives. And it's even worse than that. Al Gore has said every organ of the body is affected by climate. Under Obama's Department of Transportation, they claimed that climate change was contributing to fatal car accidents. The American Cancer Society is fretting over the carbon footprint of cancer care, and they say that cancer is up due to climate change. So if you die from cancer, organ failure, or in a car accident, guess what? You can now have climate change listed as a contributing cause of death on your death certificate. And by the way, racism, I have a whole chapter on it. That's also a cause of climate change because our country was founded by white supremacist colonialists who then helped foster the Industrial Revolution, which then created environmental justice problems, which kept, you know, minorities down. So therefore, if you die, you know, if a white cop shoots a black person, that is a climate change death too. It's not very far logic of how they're going to do this, but they love the idea of daily death tolls. Imagine CNN with the climate change death toll up there, and imagine your grandparent dies of cancer and then the doctor puts down cause of death, climate change. This would have seemed far-fetched maybe a year ago, but does it seem far-fetched to you now?
Yeah, I know it. I know it. It's moving so fast. Well, in your book, you do address the tired, you know, the 97% of scientists think a certain way claim. But I want to ask you to just say something about what it's like to be you when you're out there with all this information, all these arguments, all the quotations, all the data, but you're surrounded by people who are in this cult who say, well, you're not a scientist. I don't, you know. And by the way, if you were a quote scientist, they also would dismiss you because you're not a consensus scientist. So exactly. They've already decided in advance. They don't care what your credentials are as long as you say what they want you to say, because Bill Gates has no credentials in anything. He's just rich. And it's so funny to hear progressives who would normally want to kill a guy like Bill Gates. I mean, really, get the guillotine out, chop his head off, say, everybody, wait, stop, listen to this guy, even though he has no background in any of this. How do you deal with that?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, I've been at Georgetown University. I was, according to Georgetown campus police, they've never seen anything like that. During my presentation, this is in fall of 2019, when the Democrats were actually on the campus the same day, I was shouted down. You know, more than 50 kids came into the room and sat down, chanted, shouted, refused to leave. Campus police had to swarm in. They delayed the event an hour. They don't let me speak. I've been literally escorted off by armed climate cops at UN climate summits. They don't even like my presence, my name being involved. I've had so many debates where I've been told by producers, this is years ago before when they actually did debates, like 4 or 5 years. The last 4 years have been a sea change. Even the mainstream media doesn't acknowledge even climate deniers in their quotes exist. But they won't even allow a debate. And I've had so many debates canceled at the last second when people realize either they're having to debate or they want to debate me. And that just happens over and over. So it's amazing because they just try to marginalize and make you out to be a kook and a nut. So I capitalized on that. And the opening of the book, I have the rage at Mark Morano section, and I put in some of the best insults against me that they can muster.
Yeah, that's after you put the praise for you, Then you put all these and you tell the story of what happened at Georgetown. So some of the stuff you're talking about, you can actually find in the book. How about the kind of things that we're constantly badgered with whenever there's some quote extreme weather event, or it's a hurricane, or it's a drought, or whatever? This is always and everywhere a result of climate change. There's no subtlety. There's no maybe. There's no, this could be a contributing factor. It's, yep, we definitely know this is because of climate change.
Well, that is like, that's, how about like, that? That's like fishing out of a barrel. It is the easiest to debunk, and it's the easiest to explain to a reasonable person. On every trend, hurricanes, floods, tornadoes, there is not only no trend, there's mostly declining trends. So all you have to do is when someone claims that a California wildfire unprecedented, well, you know, I can pull out, I think it was the San Jose Mercury News using the data from California scientists. Centuries ago, California was much drier and much more fires than ever. 100 years ago, the United States had much more fires, drought, even the United Nations. So I use their own sources that they have to respect. And in many cases, even, you know, reports like the United Nations, National Climate Assessment, they bury the actual science in the report. You won't see it in the media. You won't see it in the summary for policymakers, but it's in there. And that's amazing. They can't necessarily lie about the science, but they can try to downplay it statistically, try to skew it, but it's all there and they have to admit it. So, I mean, you can name any severe weather event. It cannot be attributed to climate because it was worse in the past. There's no such thing as the unprecedented, because you can go back and always find something worse and always find longer trends. And that is true across the board, even sea level. You know, I have a section even on Miami Beach. Oh, Miami Beach is going underwater. We need to curb our climate. We need the Green New Deal. No, Miami Beach is subsiding. It's sinking in the water. Nothing to do with sea level rise. Sea level rise hasn't really changed depending on how your scale, but they switched monitoring of sea level to satellites, which created a big jump from the more traditional tide gauges. So they try to claim all sorts of things there, and they still try to come up with scary predictions of Florida underwater, but they're failing on sea level, polar bears, extreme weather, temperature. And I go through all of that. And again, I use former UN scientists who've turned against the UN. I have Nobel Prize winning scientists. I have the MIT. I have Ivy League scientists in here who voted for Gore. I try to put in people that are unassailable by their standards. And one of my favorites that I include in the book is Michael Moore himself. Michael Moore was exiled from Planet of the Progressives for one simple reason. He dissented on the solar and wind aspect of the Green New Deal. And not only did he get exiled, but he got banned on YouTube. It was an effort by Michael Mann, the UN scientist from the infamous hockey stick, and Josh Fox, who did the anti-fracking film. They were leading the way to get their fellow progressive literally snuffed out of anywhere. And Michael Moore was genuinely shocked, I think, at this. But I go through the book and all these traditional people who you think would support the Green New Deal actually don't. And they're the, I call them the intellectually honest progressives, because they realize what a load of just bunk the entire Green New Deal is from beginning to end.
Hey, folks, just a quick break in our conversation with Mark to thank our sponsor, BitTrust IRA. I know that, like me, a lot of you are interested in cryptocurrency, and I know you wish you could get in a time machine and go back and buy up a lot of Bitcoin when it was dirt cheap. But the next best thing is to use Bitcoin to diversify your portfolio and add it to your retirement account. Well, how can you do that? BitTrust IRA is going to make that super easy for you. They help you seamlessly and securely add cryptocurrency to your portfolio. They store your private keys in nuclear bunkers with military-grade encryption. And BitTrust IRA has a 24/7 trading platform with no minimum investments and unlimited trades, plus a team to help guide you along the way if you have any questions. And they also offer the lowest trading fees in the industry. So go to BitTrustIRA.com/woods today to learn more. And for a limited time, BitTrust IRA is waiving the sign-up fee for Tom Woods Show listeners. That's a $50 value. That's BitTrustIRA.com/woods. BitTrustIRA.com/woods. I want to go ahead to your chapter on children and schools, because I am quite certain that there are plenty of schools where the kids are being taught, in Greta Thunberg's language, to panic. She actually says, I want you to panic. And I am sure that this is all over the schools where the kids are being taught to be terrified. You have this great passage, by the way, in here from Bjorn Lomborg in response to her. And he says this. I want to take the time to read this because it's great. Just a century ago, life was backbreaking. Plentiful energy made better lives possible without having to spend hours collecting firewood, polluting your household with smoke, achieving heat, cold, transportation, light, food, and opportunities. Life expectancy doubled. Plentiful energy, mostly from fossil fuels, has lifted more than a billion people out of poverty in just the past 25 years. That is not evil. It is quite the opposite. Ms. Thunberg believes that climate change means people are dying. But the fact is that weather-related disasters just a century ago killed 500,000 people each year. Today, despite rising temperatures, but because of less poverty and more resilience, droughts, floods, hurricanes, and extreme temperatures kill just 20,000 people each year, a reduction of 95%. That is a morally commendable achievement. Problem with that is nobody knows about that. That's a great passage nobody knows about. What's the deal with the kids and what are they doing?
Well, what they're doing is, the short of the answer to that question, Tom, is the climate activists failed to convince adults of a climate emergency, failed to get them to act, failed to get them sufficiently alarmed. So they went after school children. And they started in kindergarten. They go all the way through college. And they've been doing it now for decades. And the results are now paying off. You see groups like the Sunshine Movement. And I detail kids that went to Capitol Hill, testified and on the steps, or actually before Congress, along with Greta, saying things like, my parents' generation messed up the planet. Thanks, mom and dad. It's up to our generation to save it. It's turning children against parent. Kids are turned into little kid climate cops going after their parents for not, you know, whether it's recycling, turning off the lights, unplugging stuff. They become a generation obsessed with saving the earth. And with that has become massive psychological damage. And I talk with psychiatric studies showing the anxiety in kids and being treated for eco-doom, as it's colloquially called. But what it all means is these kids actually believe, and as this quote after quote following Greta Thunberg's lead, that there's no reason to continue going to school when they have a future that is no more because our leaders aren't safeguarding the climate for them. And it's so bad, they've joined in with lawsuits with people like NASA's former head global warming scientist, James Hansen, and they're suing the United States government in order for the government to ensure a livable climate for their future. This is just unscientific nonsense, but it's got serious adults behind it and encouraging these poor kids.
Well, one of the problems with it is that even if it doesn't get passed in its original form, it's so extreme that it makes other proposals we would normally have considered extreme seem reasonable by comparison. I wonder if that's half the point.
Yes. In other words, what Biden is doing, now keep in mind, the Green New Deal got a bad rap, even among some Democrats. And again, in the chapter, I detail how now, exactly your point, even Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein are now the new climate deniers. They're being attacked by the youth climate movements as being the stodgy old deniers. I mean, this is shocking. Who would have thought Nancy Pelosi and Dianne Feinstein would be the new face of climate denial by the progressive left? But they are, because they didn't immediately embrace the Green New Deal, and they're skeptical and they don't like all the just the absurdity of it. I mean, this is a top-down. They're using the climate scare as the same excuse that they used over population. And I have a whole thing on global cooling. The solution to global cooling in the 1970s was the exact same as the Green New Deal. Attack on free markets, central planning, sovereignty limiting treaties, going on and on. I mean, it's almost like they've just been pushing. Climate change is merely the latest scare that's got the same exact goal, same solutions. So I think you're absolutely right. It's so extreme that anything else pales in comparison. And that's why you get, you know, traditional liberal Democrats being labeled climate deniers.
All right. Well, this has been pretty doom and gloom here. And it's not doom and gloom about the climate. It's about what these people might try to do in the name of the climate. So is there any way, before we wrap up, that I can draw out of you something optimistic about the future? I mean, we got to cling to something here, Mark.
Yes. What I like to say, and I think, looking at what's happened with COVID, my hope is people wake up. And I use East Germany as an example in the book. And here's the gist of it. The Berlin Wall did not get torn down because the East German parliament voted one day to say, it's been long enough. Let's tear down the wall, give people freedom. It came down because the people of East Germany no longer gave their consent to live under tyranny. So my hope is, you know, especially I'm very encouraged by what I'm seeing in Miami here, you know, with all the spring break revelers currently. My hope is that people no longer give consent to government for COVID style lockdowns. If we can establish that principle, and then we move over, as I quote the UK House of Commons speaker in here saying, he's so excited because the public has been so compliant, in his words, for the COVID lockdowns that he wants to just jump right over to the climate lockdowns and keep this thing going. My hope is that there is no appetite, will, or tolerance among the American people to fight this. And that's got to translate into pressure on Republican politicians and even and many Democrat politicians. And that's what my hope is, that people have had enough of the COVID style regulations, because the left looks at it. And I'll give you the quote of Jane Fonda, the actress. She came to Washington, D.C. many times to protest climate. COVID is God's gift to the left. And that's how the left views it. So we need centrist Democrats and we need Republicans en masse to just say enough is enough. We've had enough of the COVID lockdowns. We've had enough of anything resembling a coming climate lockdown. And people are going to push back hard. They're not going to accept the end of the internal combustion engine. They're not going to accept, as one Democratic candidate said, we're going to abolish private car ownership, instead have roving fleet of electric vehicles. Elizabeth Warren, when she ran, wanted to get rid of, you know, building homes unless they were, you know, carbon dioxide friendly, and all these new regulations put up every aspect of your life, costs going up to do nothing for the climate. So I'm just hoping people have had enough and they snap back at that. But I have days when I'm encouraged, days when I'm discouraged, Tom, because, you know, you walk in a Walmart and you see 99% of the people wearing masks when they don't need to be. And it's, even the sign outside says health exemption. You know, I invoke my legal health exemption and they're not allowed to ask you what it is, but I'm just saying, the more people comply, the less chance we have. The more they don't comply, the greater our chance of fighting all this.
You know, it's so fascinating even to hear, not a source I normally cite, but the World Health Organization, their most recent statement on this, that they've actually, when it comes to masks, they've been more reserved than other sources. And they've said, right now, there is only limited and inconsistent scientific evidence regarding the efficacy of masking healthy people. I know this has nothing directly to do with your book, but it's the same crazy phenomenon.
It's the same thing. It's that same idea that the science, there's a bumper sticker, actually a neighborhood where I live, and it says, science is not a liberal conspiracy. Do you know what my answer to that is, Tom? Oh, yes, it is. And the way it can be is the government basically manipulates science in order to get the policy results it desires. So in the case of masks, you can go back to the 1970s and show virtually every mask study and every medical setting over the 70s shows not only did masks not prevent viral outbreaks, but they actually increased it. And the theory, of course, being you're constantly fussing with your mask, you're touching it, it possibly gets in the mask, increasing viral loads. But all of that went out the window in 2020, and they came up with it. If you look at all these mask studies, they're either timed to, you know, the COVID had outbreaks, up and down cycles. So if you put a mask mandate on and then suddenly summer hit and your cases went down, they would declare success. That'd be one study. So they did, but they wouldn't follow up when the cases went back up with the mask mandate. And the second thing is they use models. And I go into models in the book, which is climate models, you know, whether it's Neil Ferguson's COVID model or a climate model, they're very similar. When current reality fails alarm, make scary predictions of the future. And you can also manipulate the science because you tune your model to show. Most of these mass studies that are new all are model-based, tuned to show. They assume mass work, so then they present the data showing mass work. I mean, it's like failing science 101, but you'll never get any major publication in this day. New England Journal of Medicine actually did the study on it, saying that universal masking is a reflexive action that has no impact. And then they had to issue a retraction like a month after Fauci reversed himself on masks. And then they had to apologize and act like they never said what they said. I mean, even the journals are infected. The same exact thing in climate. You're not allowed, if a journal editor publishes something that goes against the UN climate narrative, their job is threatened. In fact, you know, the scientists openly bragged about they're going to threaten journal editors that they'll never have their papers published again. Your journal would be, you know, completely made irrelevant unless you play ball. This is not science. Science is a liberal conspiracy to go against the bumper sticker there.
Yeah, somebody's got to do a book on this specifically. And the role of the state, too, in picking out who the experts that you're supposed to listen to are. There's a whole lot of crap going on. Well, last thing, and then we'll call it a day. You know how we're constantly told, you know, you have only X number of years left, you know, or it'll be too late.
Yeah.
I'm wondering when, after all these warnings about after so many years, it'll be too late. When are we going to wake up and the headline will say, it's officially too late. There's nothing we can do, so there's no point in bothering. Are we ever going to get to that? I'd love to see that.
Well, it's just kind of like COVID. There's no criteria where they can declare the end. Same with climate. There's no criteria where all these green restrictions would ever end because there's no way. I go in the book. I have a fun section on this. I go find the first tipping point on climate. 1864, a man named George Perkins Marshall warned of a coming climatic excess and that we must act. So we've been hearing about this since the 19th century, Tom. And they just keep like this street preacher predicting doom. The deadline passes. They just cross out the deadline, put a new one in. Prince Charles is the best. He had a 100-month deadline. He counted it down literally like every 10 months. After it expired, he basically issued a new deadline that was like 2045 when he would still theoretically be alive, but in his 90s. And he's got good genes, so he may make it. But it's just the classic way. They just keep doing it. The first one to do it, of course, was Paul Ehrlich with overpopulation. He made a lot of 5-10-year doom predictions. They all failed. And you know what he says now? He's still alive, almost 90 years old, Paul Ehrlich. He says, I was right. Some of my timelines might be wrong. And his defenders still do that. He still wins awards. The more wrong you are, the more, as long as you're wrong in the right direction. And that right direction has to be in service of the fear and the narrative. But if you're wrong and you do something against the narrative, your career is over. But no matter how wrong you are, Paul Ehrlich is still considered right. It's just his timing. So if you say to someone you're going to die and they die 50 years later, you were right because you said they were going to die. That's how Paul Ehrlich's taking his predictions of doom.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, Mark's book is Green Fraud, Why the Green New Deal is Even Worse Than You Think. Linked on our show notes page, tomwoods.com/1861. And best of luck with it, Mark. Very important. It's out just today, folks, so you can get one hot off the presses. It's very, very important what you're doing, and thanks for talking to us.
Thank you. I want to mention Mark Stein did a hilarious foreword as well. So all you Mark
Stein
fans, it's great stuff. So
he did. So you'll enjoy that also. So you can go to Amazon. You can get the link at tomwoods.com/1861. Thanks again, Mark.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, folks, that's it for today. Tomorrow, the heroic Ivor Cummins returns to the show. Wow, did his interview on the Tom Woods Show get a lot of attention. So I'm glad to have him back. He's been doing heroic COVID work. Patrick Reasonover, later in this week, he's one of the producers of the Politically Incorrect Guide animated series that Michael Malice and I are doing, and he has one heck of a documentary to share with us. So a lot of great stuff coming up this week. Make sure you subscribe to the Tom Woods Show, of course, tomwoods.com/apple, and I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit TomWoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at Podsworth.com.